I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Kreisler.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
With the death of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, some of our younger listeners may have questions about death and the afterlife. So let's bring in our guest, Reverend Josh Clancy. Welcome, Reverend.
Thank you.
Reverend, let me just ask what a lot of kids out there are asking today. After a person dies, what happens to his oil?
Well, my church, Episcopalianism, believes that your oil ascends northward to join a much larger pool of oil at a refinery near Baton Rouge.
And there's a higher power up there?
Oh, extremely powerful.
Mm-hmm.
They decide where the oil goes and at what price and in whose car it will be cremated.
Uh-huh. You know, a lot of children are worried that Hugo Chavez's oil may simply lie in the ground.
Well, faith will ensure that does not happen.
Good.
And America is full of people of faith.
So that's your belief. What did Chavez himself believe would happen to his oil after he died?
Oh, we don't care.
We truly do not. But we would like to extend our condolences to the people of Venezuela and offer to take care of any of their oil during these very difficult times.
Americans are good people.
We are. And bless you all.
Americans, it's time for another edition of This Week in Canada, eh? Tonight's panel of famous Canadians consists of Geddy Lee, Neil Young, and Kiefer Sutherland's grandfather. Good day, eh?
Good day, eh?
Our show covers everything Canada from A to Z. Now, this week, there's one word that's on everybody's lips. Geddy Lee.
A modern gay warrior, mean, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean, mean pride.
What was that all about?
I'm sorry, I'm rehearsing for Rush's 437th tour.
Neil?
There is a town in North Ontario.
You're not even saying one word. Kiefer Sutherland's grandfather.
I'm Tommy Douglas, eh? The Premier of Saskatchewan from 1944 to 1961, leader of the first North American socialist government, and creator of the continent's first single-payer universal health care system, eh?
And most important, the granddad of Jack Bauer. Any idea what word is on everyone's lips?
Medicare?
Nope.
Medicaid?
Nope.
Cunt?
Well, that did cause controversy this week, eh?
No, I was calling you one, eh?
Fair enough, eh? But the word, eh, we're looking for is Argo, eh?
Argo, eh?
No, Argo.
Why would Argo cause controversy?
It didn't. It won Best Picture at the Academy Awards, eh?
Living on a lighted stage approaches the unreal.
Hey. Are you rehearsing for your tour again?
No, I was describing Ben Affleck's acceptance speech. Why did he pick the Academy Awards to tell Jennifer Garner how much he wants to work on their marriage?
A man needs a maid.
He kept thanking Canada because he was embarrassed that he downplayed Canada's actions in the movie, eh? And because he didn't give a part to my grandson, Donald Sutherland.
Kiefer Sutherland.
Under socialism, we're all Sutherlands.
I don't know what that's all about, but that's all the time we have. And why is that all the time we have? Because that's all the United States will give us. Geddy Lee, I know you're touring with Rush. Neil?
I'm touring with this old man. Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were.
That's right. We have a new act called Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, and Kiefer Sutherland's grandfather, eh?
For all of us here at This Week in Canada, stay polite and inoffensive. This is being brought to you by Tar Sands, the world's worst energy source. That's what it's all about.
Oh, Canada, we stand on God.
It's time for Breaking Heads.
Oh! New gun control measure would define as mentally ill
anyone who owns an assault rifle and a 30-round mag.
Musical chairs event at Conjoined Twins Festival ends badly.
Adolescent boys named Pussy Riot behind bars, most misleading headline of 2012.
The final edition Radio Hour is at IHOP today to investigate a little-known gastronomic miracle, maple syrup. To help me today are two young ladies who love maple syrup, June and Jane.
Hi.
June and Jane are dressed in furry woolen items against the freezing weather, which, ironically, makes them look very hot.
Sexist. Pug.
June, Jane, we all love a stack of pancakes from IHOP slathered with maple syrup. But where does maple syrup come from?
China, McDonald's, bottles?
Nope.
Bees, corn, maple syrup wells?
Nice try, but nope again. Maple syrup comes from maple trees. Maple syrup is the blood of trees.
Ew!
Maple blood is called sap. Every spring, men go out in the woods and drill holes in maple trees.
Sick. That tree is screaming right now.
Then they hammer a wooden tap into each hole to catch the sap.
They say that's what it's for. Perverts.
Excuse me, sir. What are you doing?
I'm tapping sap. I'm a sap tapper.
Liar. You fuck trees.
I've been tapping sap for 52 years. Sap tapping is crap. All it does is drip. And you don't get no respect.
No means no, you prick. I bet it's underage.
Givens! They don't want to be sap tappers. I'm dying out.
Good. Who needs you? Die soon.
Yes, young people are turning their backs on the ancient craft of tapping sap. For generations, the children of sap tappers tapped sap. Now, they're heading for the cities, looking for careers as hedge fund managers, high-end restaurateurs, and gigolos. And that's a problem. Thanks to global warming, maples are producing more sap than ever before. But if that sap isn't tapped, this happens.
Oh my god, that skeevy old pervert got the tree pregnant. Look at that baby bump. It's getting, like, huge.
And if emergency sap tappers can't be found, another maple bites the dust. Amazing! The tree is vaporized. Only a shattered stump remains.
Oh my god, I'm covered with gunk. Icky, sticky, maple syrup-colored gunk. Ew! Ew.
From New England to British Columbia, forests are beginning to sound like a war zone as untapped, sap-packed maple trees go to meet their maker. The air is packed with sap. Our chopper is slathered with maple syrup. We're going down.
I'm poor now. Trees suck.
And now, an OK Cupid tragic romance.
Dear green-eyed girl 297, your profile says you like travel, wine, and yoga, that you are a foodie, that you are as comfortable in jeans as in a little black dress, that you love watching Downton Abbey, reading David Sedaris, and listening to NPR. How strange and rare you are. Like an orchid that sprouts through the rocks. May we meet some night under a mystery sky and dance to the music of madness. I am free Mondays and Thursdays, though not this particular Thursday, but most Thursdays.
Dear Brooklyn Al 23, your profile is unfathomable. That you have no typical Friday night. That you love all music except rap and country. That you work hard. Yet play harder. and that you spent the first two paragraphs in your profile saying how bad you are at writing about yourself. You are an exotic and fond foolish man with the heart of a god. Mondays and Thursdays aren't good. Wednesday nights are okay, except I'm out of town this week for a conference. How's next week?
Green-eyed, last night I saw you in a dream. The way you looked in the third photo in your profile, the picture from 2007. You stood on a hilltop like the star of an Irish myth, with storm winds streaming out your hair, then turned to me and spoke but a single word. Inspiratio. Next week sucks. It's this whole stupid complicated thing, but basically I've got to be in my apartment every night to wait for the guy from Time Warner. The Friday after? Darling green-eyed girl 297, I have not heard from you, and grow concerned. Have I offended? Do you languish? I fear for what we hold between us. Silence still. So it is done. We have lost what was never found.
No, I just flaked out. That's something I do. Dearest Brooklyn Al 23, my soul is yours and I die in ecstatic transference. For in the death of self, there is life in the new being that becomes. But on Friday, I have a mani-pedi and I made this appointment literally 6 months ago. How about, let's see, at this point we're talking about 3 weeks from now, Saturday the 27th.
And I, too, would die in the light of your voice. But the 27th is my weekend with the kids. Tell you what, I've got an opening next year on February 3rd. How's that?
You are the spirit of madness and abandon. Sure, February 3rd works.
Then someday, in a far and fair future, we shall meet in the West Village, and we shall open our hearts and become like the ages and not eat fish, because I am allergic to fish.
It's time for another story from the final edition's Big Book of Morally Improving Virtues. Tonight, the story of Midas. This retelling of the ancient legend of the fabulously wealthy king underlines the importance of more stringent handgun control. There was this guy called Midas. Not a king, just an ordinary Joe. He lived in Los Cerritos with his overweight teenage daughter, Marianne. Midas was a nice enough guy, except he was always dreaming about getting rich quick. Various schemes had come his way, and he made a little on some of them, but nothing spectacular. His wife left him when he got involved with Amway, which she said was a cult. Then she started drinking, so Marianne came to live in Los Cerritos. She worked at Burger King once, now she watched TV. One day, Midas was in the den, checking the lottery numbers, when a shadow fell across him. Looking up, he saw a stranger dressed in shining white, smiling down at him. "Holy shit," said Midas, diving for the Beretta he kept in the drawer. "Hold on a second, Midas," said the stranger. "I bring you good news." "Fuck you, asshole," said Midas, and shot him in the throat. The stranger slumped to the ground, mortally wounded. Blood spurted from his carotid artery like water from a garden hose.
"You fool," said the stranger. "I was going to give you the power, starting tomorrow, of turning everything you touched into gold."
"Yeah, right," said Midas, dialing 911, "and I'm the fucking Queen of England." Midas got off with justifiable homicide. Sometimes of an evening, though, he wondered about the stranger in shining white and what it would be like to have that power. Just think, he could turn his fat fucking daughter into gold, melt her down, and buy a boat. Pay off the house, too. Oh, well. The end.
It's time for Breaking Heads.
Oh!
Lone soldier from future forgets name of woman he's supposed to save.
New Scientology practice makes Tom Cruise appear 6'5" tall.
Web engineer starts a Kickstarter campaign to raise money for his bank account.
American Masters presents Nadia Suleiman, the Octomom.
The Octomom? Well, I I guess she got famous by accident. Now she has to keep being famous to feed her kids.
So you would say she's an American treasure?
Yes.
Say the whole thing for camera.
The Octomom is an American treasure.
My food bill is more than $4,000 a month. How do you expect me to make that kind of money with a bachelor's in child development, and I can't even work full-time?
So you did that baby fetish video?
You've seen it. It was tasteful.
Nadia Suleiman was born, alone, in Fullerton, California on July the 11th, 1975. She had two kids. Then four more kids. Then eight kids at once. Then her fertility doctor was kicked out of the medical profession. So now she's famous. Terry Majors, culture expert.
She's like a great work of art. Each person looks at Nadia and sees something different.
For example, this recent radio call-in show.
I think it's shameful. The Octomom had all those kids, and she's on welfare.
Actually, caller, Nadia cut down on the amount of welfare by posing nude for a British magazine.
I think it's shameful. The Octomom had all those kids, and she's posing nude for a British magazine.
And her story can still go in so many directions. Maybe she'll go completely on public assistance, or maybe she'll do porn full-time, or... Actually, those are the only two directions I can think of.
Ron Bestor, TV executive.
She's the perfect reality show. I mean, because this process of a single mom sinking into chaos, the story continues, whether it's on the air or not.
So she'll just reappear on TV every couple of years and make people feel superior for some reason?
And that happens until her kids move out. It's like an 18-year contract to be famous. Pia Zadora was only really famous for about 10 years, and she could actually do stuff.
I think, in the end, the Octomom is a mystery wrapped in an enigma. Or she's just kind of average, except she has a bunch of kids.
Nadia, do you think your life serves as a synecdoche for a de-evolutionary society in which science overindulges our latent pathologies? Or are you simply living an accidental life in a post-Kierkegaardian paradigm?
I don't know. I'm going to be on Dr. Oz next week, and I can ask him.
Next time on American Masters, Jason Alexander. No, not the actor from Seinfeld, but Jason Alexander, who was married to Britney Spears for a day. It's time for another episode of Sister Mary Che Explains It All For You.
Hello, ladies. It's your little old left-lib nun again, Sister Mary Che, coming to you live from the mother house of my wonderful, wonderful order, the Little Sisters of Noam Chomsky. Big news in nun world this week, ladies. Our nemesis, Benji the Rottweiler of God, is resigning to spend more time with his family. Oh no. Wait. The moment we ladies of the veil heard this news, we went, I think the expression is batshit. You see, Benji had been making life hell, or purgatory now that hell's been abolished, for us American nuns. He ordered a nationwide visitation, translation, traveling inquisition, to congregations he considered heretical, translation, lefties. And the Little Sisters of Noam Chomsky were prime targets. We couldn't imagine why. And then the visitator, or as we called her, Sister Axe, told us it was because Sister Germaine and Sister Gloria had been communicating with known homosexuals. Well, holy duh! If you can't talk to your patients, it's a bit hard to run an AIDS hospice, isn't it? Okay. Some nuns do have slightly extreme views. There's a teaching order in Wisconsin called the Little Sisters of We're Nuns, Get Used to It, Okay? Which works very well for them in inner city neighborhoods where they teach. But they also claim the latest biblical research proves conclusively Jesus was a woman, and from now on should be called the Messiah. So, because they're all lesbians, and they're all brides of Christ, they're all in same-sex marriages. Very threatening to Benji. He wanted nuns back in our traditional roles, cooking and cleaning toilets for priests, and occasionally doing them, favors. And always in those horrid, sweaty, itchy habits. The Vatican version of the burqa. But Benji's given up. No stamina. Not infallible. God's Rottweiler is off to the Shady Pines doggy rest home. We've won. Now, we're playing the old Catholic guessing game. Who's your papa? Which one of the very old, very unmarried, 90% white, 90% European men will be the next pope? The next Holy Father of Holy Mother Church? Pretty clear where we are in that relationship, right, ladies? Not on top. Yes, we have nothing to say about who it's going to be. Even if the next pope is black or brown, there'll still be two classes in the church. The people with penises, the hierarchy, and us without the lowerarchy. But we little sisters of this and that will always outlast them, because we do what the men are supposed to do, but often don't. You know, all that boring Christ stuff. And we don't spend a fortune on dresses. Never forget, ladies, life doesn't begin at conception. Life begins at 40. This is your little old left-lib nun, Sister Mary Che, saying farewell till next time. Amen.
You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour.
WBEZ, Chicago.
It's This American Life. I'm Ira Glass. In our journey with this program, we have covered all sorts of topics that have surely driven you into a black depression, from high schools that had to cancel proms because of too much gang violence, to the hopeless stories of people who are slowly killing themselves with addictions, and just when you think they will persevere, they die. These stories do not make us uncomfortable to report. We actually delight in sharing tales of poverty, murder, and disease. However, there is one topic that makes us all very uncomfortable. Sports. Nancy Updike reports.
Sports. I don't even know what that is.
Nancy, the Webster's Dictionary gives us the definition of sports as an athletic activity requiring skill or physical prowess and often of a competitive nature.
That sounds absurd to me. Why would anyone compete?
Or be physical. Yes, I understand. However, people do actually do this. Here, maybe noted author and NPR regular Sarah Val can help explain.
Nancy, sports is when we've had Mike Birbiglia tell a story on the program for the past 30 episodes, and it's the same story.
No, Sarah, that's not sports. That's just because we love the soothing, non-threatening tones of Mike Birbiglia, and so we can give ourselves a smug, oh yes, I get it, chuckle to ourselves.
Oh, right, of course. Oh, yes, I know it's sports now. David Sedaris making fun of tourists in Paris.
No, Sarah, that's not sports. That's a charmed life.
Well, then I'm as lost as Nancy.
I know. It's a topic that's too frightening to even digest the concept. Okay, let me try to explain. It's a thing that involves sweat most of the time.
I'm afraid.
So am I. It usually involves a sort of running, and there is a score involved.
Are you sure that's not Mike Birbiglia?
No, it is not.
I thought everything was Mike Birbiglia.
Well, we all do, but it is not.
Then what is it? What is this horrible, horrible thing called sports?
Nancy, remember your NPR voice?
I'm sorry, Ira.
But this sports is insanely frightening. I'd rather talk about ethnic genocide.
I know. So would I. Let me try to explain in our terms. We discovered that Mike Daisy did not report the entire truth in this program, The Agony and Ecstasy of Steve Jobs, and we banished him from This American Life. However, if his next show perseveres and does well, he may become a regular guest again.
Ah, like the struggle of impoverished ghettos on the outskirts of Olympic chosen cities.
That's close enough.
I still think it's Mike Birbiglia.
This has been This American Life. I'm Ira Glass. Join us next week when we will resume ripping your hearts out and leaving you with a sense of utter hopelessness.
This episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour was performed by Darby Worley, Jen Dodd, Rob Gordon, Barry Lank, Kevin Janis, John Marshall, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. It was written by Barry Lank, John Marshall, Paul Seaburn, Mike Richardson-Bryan, Rob Gordon, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. Go to thefinaledition.com for more sizzling satire with teeth, and be sure to do that on a daily basis. The Final Edition Radio Hour was produced by Jeff Chrysler and Tony Hendra and edited and engineered by Greg Russ. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, LLC. Copyright 2013.